Chapter 13. Bin Laden on the Run.
The Osama Bin Laden I Know. Disc 14.
Scott McClellan, the White House spokesman, on October 5, 2005. We continue to pursue Bin Laden. We will bring him to justice. He is someone who has been on the run. We've made great success in dismantling and disrupting the leadership of Al-Qaeda, and some three-quarters of the top leadership of Al-Qaeda has been brought to justice in one way or another. But this is a broader movement than any one person. What follows are some of Bin Laden's key statements that he has made while on the run. They reflect an initial pessimism after the fall of the Taliban and the Battle of Tora Bora. But over the years, Bin Laden's tone becomes more forceful and self-assured. He even has made an attempt to appear statesmanlike from 2004 onwards, offering truces with nations that pull out of the coalition in Iraq and, just before the U.S. presidential election, speaking directly to American voters. In recent years, Bin Laden has increasingly adopted the role of the elder statesman of jihad. On December 14, 2001, around the time of his escape from Tora Bora, Osama bin Laden wrote his will, which strikes an introspective, dispirited note. The following excerpts first appeared in Al-Majalla magazine in October 2002. Allah commended to us that when death approaches any of us, that we make a bequest to parents and next of kin, and to Muslims as a whole. If every Muslim asks himself, why has our nation reached this state of humiliation and defeat? Then his obvious answer is because it rushed madly for the comforts of life and discarded the Book of Allah. The Jews and Christians have tempted us with the comforts of life and its cheap pleasures, and invaded us with their materialistic values before invading us with their armies, while we stood like women doing nothing, because the love of death in the cause of Allah has deserted the hearts. The principal cause of our nation's ordeal is its fear from dying in the cause of Allah. O youth of the nation, crave death, and life will be given to you. My last advice to all the Mujahideen, wherever they are, recover your breath and forget for the time being the fight against the Jews and Crusaders. Devote yourselves to purging your ranks of agents and the weak and the bad clerics who are refraining from jihad and who have let the nation down. Your brother, Abu Abdallah Osama bin Muhammad bin Laden, Friday, 28 Ramadan, 1422 Hijra, corresponding to 14 December 2001. Bin Laden signed his will the day after the Night of Power, which falls on the 27th of Ramadan. As mentioned in Chapter 3, this is a day of special importance for Muslims when it is particularly auspicious to die as the gates of heaven are open. Death was clearly weighing on Bin Laden's mind during this period. On December 27, 2001, Al Jazeera aired Bin Laden's first videotaped statement after his escape from Tora Bora. Bin Laden explained that the emphasis should now not be on the role of himself and his followers, Al-Qaeda, the organization, but the awakening of Muslims, Al-Qaeda, the ideology. His words follow. The latest events have proved important truths. It has become clear that the West in general and America in particular have an unspeakable hatred for Islam. Terrorism against America deserves to be praised because it was a response to injustice, aimed at forcing America to stop its support for Israel, which kills our people. We say that the end of the United States is imminent, whether bin Laden or his followers are alive or dead, for the awakening of the Muslim Ummah nation has occurred. Hamza bin Laden is one of bin Laden's sons. In a poem posted on Al-Qaeda's main website, Islamic Studies and Research, sometime in June 2002, Hamza addressed himself to his father about the difficulties of life on the run. O father, where is the escape and when will we have a home? O father, I see spheres of danger everywhere I look. How come our home has vanished without a trace? Why is it that we only see barriers along our path? O Father, why have they showered us with bombs like rain, having no mercy for a child? O Father, what has happened for us to be chased by danger? Immortality is our destiny, should God Almighty desire victory for us. Tell me, Father, something useful about what I see. Osama bin Laden replied to his son with his own poem. O son, suffice to say that I am full of grief and sighs. What can I say if we are living in a world of laziness and discontent? What can I say to a world that is blind in both sight and perception? Pardon me, my son, but I can only see a very steep path ahead. A decade has gone by in vagrancy and travel, and here we are in our tragedy. Security has gone, but danger remains. It is a world of crimes in which children are slaughtered like cows. For how long will real men be in short supply? Action must somehow be done to ward off harm. I have sworn by God Almighty to fight the infidel. Despite being on the run, bin Laden and his number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, have been able to continue to influence jihadist militants around the world by releasing a series of audio and videotapes that have been widely disseminated. There is a strong correlation between al-Qaeda's leaders calling for attacks and their later execution. Shortly after bin Laden called for renewed assaults against the West in October 2002, a disco was bombed in Bali, Indonesia, killing 200 mostly Western tourists. And a suicide attack was launched at a French oil tanker steaming off the coast of Yemen. In September 2003, al-Zawahiri condemned Pakistan's President Pervez Musharraf for supporting the campaign against al-Qaeda. Musharraf narrowly survived two assassination attempts 3 months later. In October 2003, bin Laden called for attacks against members of the coalition in Iraq. Terrorists subsequently bombed a British consulate in Turkey and commuters on their way to work in both Madrid and London. Ahmed Zaidan, Al Jazeera's Pakistan bureau chief, here recalls receiving a mysterious videotape on November 12, 2002, a month after the Bali attacks. It was at 10 o'clock. Somebody called me and he said that, "Okay, I have something for you. There's something urgent for you. Come to the place." And I drive to that place and parked my car, and all of a sudden, somebody approached me. It was night, of course, and he said, "Okay, this is yours, take." I said, "What is it?" He said, "This is the bin Laden tape." I told him, "Okay, wait, hold on for a minute, I want to ask..." And he disappeared, and of course, I couldn't be patient. I put it in the tape, and the tape was Osama bin Laden, no doubt. Of course, it was the most important scoop for me, really. He was alive. The bin Laden videotape was broadcast on Al Jazeera on November 12, 2002. It was his first videotaped statement in almost a year. This is an edited version. What has happened since the conquests of New York and Washington up until now, like the operations on Germans in Tunisia, an attack on April 11, 2002, on a synagogue that killed 17, on the French in Karachi in May 2002 that killed 12, on Australians and Britons in the explosions in Bali on October 12, 2002 that killed 200, as well as the recent hostage-taking in Moscow in October 2002 that killed 129 hostages and 41 terrorists, and other operations here and there, were nothing but the response of Muslims eager to defend their religion and respond to the order of God and their prophet. Do your governments not know that the clique in the White House is made up of the greatest murderers of the century? Rumsfeld is the butcher of Vietnam who has killed more than 2 million people. Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense as the Vietnam War was winding down. Cheney and Powell have murdered and destroyed in Baghdad more than did Hulagu, a 13th-century Mongolian warlord who conquered the city. Why did your governments ally themselves with America to attack us in Afghanistan? and I cite in particular Great Britain, France, Italy, Canada, Germany, and Australia. Australia was warned about its participation in the war in Afghanistan, but it ignored this warning until it was awakened by the echoes of explosions in Bali. Its government subsequently pretended falsely that its citizens were not targeted. If you suffer to see your people killed, and those of your allies in Tunisia, Karachi, Bali, remember our people killed among the children of Palestine in Iraq. Remember our dead in Afghanistan. As you look at your dead in Moscow, also recall ours in Chechnya. For how long will fear, massacres, destruction, exile, orphanhood, and widowhood be our lot, while security, stability, and joy remain your domain alone? It is high time that equality be established to this effect. As you assassinate, so will you be assassinated. And as you bomb, so will you likewise be. Excerpts follow from a bin Laden statement that was released on February 16, 2003. It's clear from this that the Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916, which set the stage for the carving up of the Ottoman Empire between the French and the British following the end of World War I, plays the same role for bin Laden that the 1919 Treaty of Versailles did for Adolf Hitler, a humiliating stab in the back that must be avenged and reversed. We still suffer from the injuries inflicted by the Crusaders' wars on the Islamic world in the last century, and by the Sykes-Picot Agreement between Britain and France, which divided the Muslim world into fragments. And now we find ourselves confronted once more with the spirit of the Sykes-Picot Agreement under another name, the Bush-Blair Agreement, which is conducted under the same banner and for the same purpose. The banner is that of the cross, the purpose is the destruction and plunder of Muslims. On April 14, 2004, a month after the multiple bombings of commuter trains in Madrid that killed 191, bin Laden offered a truce to European nations participating in the coalition in Iraq. Excerpts follow. Think about what happened on September 11th and March 11th, 2004, the bombings in Madrid. I offer a truce to Europe. This first truce can be renewed upon expiry and the establishment of a new government agreed upon by both parties. And the announcement of the truce starts with the withdrawal of the last soldier from our land, a reference to Afghanistan and Iraq. And the door is open for 3 months from the date of the announcement of this statement. Whoever rejects this truce and wants war, we are war's sons. And whoever wants this truce, here we bring it. One of the most significant developments after 9/11 was bin Laden's willingness to approve a terror campaign against the Saudi regime. This was the culmination of bin Laden's journey from his initial reluctance to oppose the Saudi royal family in the late 1980s to becoming an implacable enemy of the Saudi government. Excerpts of statement by Osama bin Laden, December 16, 2004, posted to Al-Qala, the fortress, website. The government of Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, has entered into an international alliance with the infidel crusaders led by Bush against Islam and its people. This is a short message to the Riyadh rulers and decision-makers. There is a contract between the ruler and his subjects entailing rights and obligations on both parties. One of its main features is that the ruler protects his people. But the truth is otherwise. You have oppressed the people without their agreement. The people have woken from their slumber and realized the extent of the tyranny and corruption that you exercise. You might also keep in mind the fate of the Shah of Iran and the fate of Ceausescu in Romania, dictators who were overthrown by popular revolutions. Abdulaziz al-Mukrin, also known as Abu Hajar, assumed command of al-Qaeda's operations in Saudi Arabia in March 2004. Al-Mukrin's cell was involved in attacks on residential compounds in the cities of Riyadh and Khobar in 2003 and 2004, in which 51 were killed. He is also believed to be responsible for the killings of Simon Cumbers, a BBC cameraman, and two Americans, Robert Jacobs and Paul Johnson. Al-Mukrin was killed in Riyadh on June 18, 2004. In October 2003, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula launched an internet magazine, Voice of Jihad. In the first and second issues, Al-Mukrin gave an interview with Voice of Jihad, excerpts of which follow. In his interview, Mukrin references an initial disagreement within Al-Qaeda about launching attacks in Saudi Arabia itself. After the 9/11 attacks and the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, bin Laden and other Al-Qaeda leaders are believed to have encouraged local cells to get their operations underway. On May 12, 2003, Al-Qaeda struck three residential compounds in Riyadh, killing 35 and wounding 200. Today, Allah be praised, I am in Saudi Arabia, at the front that we sought to purify and liberate from the defilement of the treacherous rulers, and even before them, from the defilement of the American crusaders and their allies. I swore to purify the Arabian Peninsula from the polytheists. We were born in this land, and we will fight in it against the crusaders and against the Jews until we expel them or until we taste martyrdom. I received many offers from sheikhs to go to Iraq. Unfortunately, what they wanted was to get us out of the Arabian Peninsula. True, Iraq is a front, and Allah be praised, we are investing efforts in it. It is a front that we want to utilize for fighting the Americans, like the other fronts of jihad. To all those who suggested that I go to Iraq, I say, forget it. You must think also about the conflict with these infidels in Saudi Arabia. On operations in Saudi Arabia, jihad members and lovers of Mujahideen were split. There were those who said we must attack the invading forces that defile the land of the two holy places. There were others who said we had to preserve the security of this base and this country, that is, Saudi Arabia, from which we recruit armies, from which we get financial backing. It is true that we must use this country, Saudi Arabia, because it is the primary source of funds for most jihad movements, and it has some degree of security and freedom of movement. However, we must strike a balance between this and the American invasion of the Islamic world and its strangling of the jihad movement. We tell them, those opposed to the bombings in Saudi Arabia, if only you were to see the prisons filled with Mujahideen youth and pro-jihad preachers. You must do something. You must fight the enemies of Allah, the crusaders and the Jews, and become a bone in their throats and hearts. As it launched its terror campaign in Saudi Arabia in 2003, Al-Qaeda also started publishing a newsletter, the Al-Batar Military Camp publication, directed at Saudi jihadists, indicating Al-Qaeda's new resolve to mount operations in the Saudi kingdom. The following edition, from 2003, laid out useful information for Al-Qaeda members in Saudi Arabia. Saif al-Adl, Al-Qaeda's present military commander, explains how to choose and operate a safe house. The safe house is a place used for undercover operations and security purposes. How to choose the safe house? 1. Far from official security-type places. 2. Far from areas with crime and drugs. 3. Avoid crowded areas or the downtown. 4. A place that blends into its surroundings. 5. A place that is difficult to have constant surveillance. 6. Many exits available, preferably secret. 7. Used for only one purpose, as a safe house. How the safe house should be used. 1. Used for secret activities, but publicly, a good cover story must be used. 2. Original owner you are renting from should not know the reason you are renting. 3. The house should reflect its occupants so as not to attract attention, that is, rich people in a rich-looking house. 4. Do regular checkups to make sure the safe house is secure. 5. The house should have sufficient medical supplies, food, and other supplies to minimize the need to leave the safe house. 6. support only one operation at a time. 7. Have a map of the house with all the doors and exits and hide it well. 8. Evacuate immediately if you have any doubts for your security. The Saudi strategy to eliminate al-Qaeda in the kingdom has been an aggressive military and intelligence effort to capture or kill terrorists such as Abdulaziz Mukrin, who personally executed American helicopter maintenance specialist Paul Johnson in June 2004. 2 days after a video of Johnson's beheading surfaced on the internet, security forces killed Mukrin. According to Saudi officials, since 2003, more than 90 other militants have been killed and 800 detained. For the moment, al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia appears to be damaged, capable of mounting only sporadic and ineffectual attacks. However, the hardcore Saudi jihadists are now fighting in Iraq. Several studies have found that more than half of the suicide operations in Iraq are conducted by Saudis. And so, for the moment, the Saudi militants are distracted. Whenever the Iraq war finally winds down, those militants will likely launch another deadly campaign of terror inside the Saudi kingdom. Since the 9/11 attacks, bin Laden and his chief deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, have released more than 30 audio and videotapes, an average of one tape every 6 weeks. Tracing back the chain of custody of these tapes is the one guaranteed method of finding the location of al-Qaeda's leaders. However, despite the fact that most of these tapes have generally been released first to Al Jazeera television, U.S. intelligence services, which are funded to the tune of at least $30 billion a year, are seemingly incapable of tracing the chain of custody of the tapes, an abject failure of intelligence gathering. The release of a bin Laden videotape just before the U.S. presidential election was no exception to this pattern. Ahmed Zaidan, Al Jazeera's Pakistan bureau chief, who had received a similar bin Laden tape 2 years earlier following the terrorist attacks in Bali, Indonesia, received a mysterious videotape at his Islamabad office 5 days before the U.S. election on November 2, 2004. CNN's Barbara Starr reported that the day the bin Laden tape was released, Pentagon officials were not surprised that bin Laden would issue such a statement around the time of the U.S. presidential election. Yet there is nothing to indicate that American intelligence agencies were staking out the most obvious recipient of such a tape, Al Jazeera's bureau in Pakistan. The bin Laden videotape played on Al Jazeera and television networks around the world on October 29, 2004. On the tape, in a Halloween parody of an Oval Office address, bin Laden speaks directly to the American people from behind a desk, dressed formally in gold robes. The interview is well lit, suggesting a well-prepared production, and we see bin Laden without a gun at his side, a rare sight. On the tape, bin Laden for the first time makes an unequivocal public admission of his own involvement in the 9/11 plot, and he responds directly to President Bush's frequent claim that al-Qaeda is attacking the United States because of its freedoms rather than its foreign policy. You, the American people, I talk to you today about the best way to avoid another catastrophe, and about war, its reasons and its consequences. And in that regard, I say to you that security is an important pillar of human life, and that free people do not compromise their security. Contrary to what Bush says and claims, that we hate your freedom, so why did we not attack Sweden? I wonder about you, the American people. Although we are now the fourth year after 9/11, Bush is still exercising confusion and misleading you and not telling you the true reason why you are being attacked. Therefore, the motivations are still there for what happened to be repeated. We agreed with the leader of the 9/11 hijackers, Mohammed Atta, to perform all attacks within 20 minutes before Bush and his administration were aware of what was going on. And I tell you, God only knows that we never had the intention to destroy the Twin Towers. But after injustice was so much, and we saw the coalition between Americans and the Israelis against our people in Palestine and Lebanon, it occurred to my mind that we deal with the towers. Your security is not in the hands of Kerry or Bush or al-Qaeda. Your security is in your own hands. Each state that will not mess with our security will find security themselves. Ahmed Zaidan, Al Jazeera's Pakistan bureau chief. Osama was looking like he is giving a lecture in Georgetown University. Now he is playing a very good public relations and media game. Noman bin Othman, the Libyan who fought with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan during the early 90s, here is critical of bin Laden's message on the videotape. So if you are electing George W. Bush as president, you have to pay. That's the bottom line. It's very naive, this argument. It's not logical. There are 8 million Muslims in America. So they are legitimate targets also? Jamal Khalifa, bin Laden's brother-in-law and one-time close friend. Osama is doing these things which it's not logical, not Islamic, and not even strategic. I'm very sorry. I love him. I really love him. But really, he is doing very big mistakes. He is really destroying the image of Islam. The attacks in London on July 7, 2005, in which 4 British suicide bombers killed 52, are emblematic of the continued influence enjoyed by bin Laden and Zawahiri among jihadists around the world. On a videotape made by Al-Qaeda's media arm known as Al-Sahab, the Clouds, which was released on September 1, 2005, the leader of the London terrorist cell, Mohammed Siddiq Khan, explains that he was operating on behalf of bin Laden. Khan likely made contact with Al-Qaeda when he took time off from his job as a teacher in the city of Leeds in northern England to visit Pakistan in November 2004. Khan speaks on the videotape in the broad Yorkshire accent of his native Leeds and appears without his 3 fellow British suicide bombers, suggesting that the tape was made on his visit to Pakistan in late 2004. Excerpts of his statement follow. Praise be to Allah, blessings and prayers upon his prophet. I'm going to keep this short and to the point because it's all been said before by far more eloquent people than me, and our words have no impact upon you, therefore I'm going to talk to you in a language that you understand. Our words are dead until we give them life with our blood. I and thousands like me have forsaken everything for what we believe. Your democratically elected governments continuously perpetuate atrocities against my people all over the world, and your support of them makes you directly responsible, just as I am directly responsible for protecting and avenging my Muslim brothers and sisters. Until we feel security, you will be our targets. And until you stop the bombing, gassing, imprisonment, and torture of my people, we will not stop this fight. We are at war, and I am a soldier. Now you too will taste the reality of this situation. Raise me amongst those whom I love, today's heroes, like our beloved Sheikh Osama bin Laden, Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and all the other brothers and sisters who are fighting in Allah's cause. On the same videotape on which Khan appeared, Zawahiri explains that the London bombings were revenge for Britain's participation in the war in Iraq, and came as a result of ignoring bin Laden's 2004 offer of a truce with those European nations participating in the coalition in Iraq, an offer that expired on July 15, 2004, almost exactly a year before the London attacks took place. I speak to you today about the blessed London raid. Rejoice, O peoples of the Crusader Coalition, in the calamities brought upon you, and which, Allah willing, will be brought upon you by the policies of Bush, Blair, and those who follow them. O peoples of the Crusader Coalition, we have warned you, but it appears that you want us to make you taste the horrors of death. So taste some of what you made us taste. Didn't the Lion of Islam, the Mujahid Sheikh Osama bin Laden, may Allah protect him, offer you a truce, so you would leave the lands of Islam? Abdul Bari Atwan interviewed bin Laden in 1996 for Al-Quds Al-Arabi newspaper. He reflects on why it has been so hard to find Al-Qaeda's leader. The U.S. didn't find Osama bin Laden for one reason. Osama bin Laden is a humble man. He can live on a little food. He can live without any luxury, and he is like millions who are in that part of the world in Afghanistan or Pakistan. And also, he is loved by the people wherever they are, whether inside Pakistan or Afghanistan. And I don't believe they will surrender him. He's adored by the people around him. For them, he is not a leader. He is everything. He's the father. He's the brother. He is a leader. He is the imam. He is a good example, a man who sacrificed all his wealth to come and live with them, among them, and to fight for their causes. He is different, and he is not corrupt, and so he represents the pioneers of Muslim early Islamic history, the Prophet Muhammad's companions. Where is bin Laden? Is an often asked question. It is, however, to some degree an unanswerable question, except to say that he is likely in the border region between Afghanistan and Pakistan. However, the Pakistan-Afghan border stretches 1,500 miles, roughly the distance from Washington, D.C. to Denver. It is lightly guarded and even undefined in some places. Clandestine travel in the region is therefore relatively easy. The two Pakistani provinces that abut Afghanistan are Baluchistan, a vast, inhospitable expanse of broiling deserts, and the Northwest Frontier Province, a flinty, mountainous region punctuated by the fortresses of tribal chiefs. Pashtun tribes, who constitute one of the largest tribal groups in the world, are a major presence in both provinces. They subscribe to Pashtunwali, the law of the Pashtuns, which places an enormous premium on hospitality and on the giving of refuge to anybody who seeks it, an obvious boon to fugitive members of Al-Qaeda. There is also a possibility that bin Laden may be hiding out in an area that is somewhat urbanized. His most recent videotape that appeared just before the U.S. presidential election of 2004 was a professional production in which he appeared well-groomed and well-informed about current events, not what you would expect from someone trapped in a remote cave in a tribal border region. Indeed, since 9/11, none of the key Al-Qaeda operatives captured in Pakistan have been found in the country's tribal areas. Instead, they have been run to ground in the cities of Karachi, Peshawar, Quetta, Faisalabad, Gujarat, and Rawalpindi. That suggests that bin Laden might also have found refuge in some kind of urban area, perhaps inside the tribal region where there are a number of small towns along the Afghan-Pakistan border. But the short answer to the question about where bin Laden might be can be summarized as, who knows?